been said that you've learned up on United's history when you first arrived. How did you go about doing that? Did you sit yourself down with DVDs and books?
Yeah, because see, that's when I think this is a declic before being a player for Man United, because when I come in my first 6 months, I was just, you know, playing, and I was not interested a lot about the story of the club. And I start to watch the DVD, to read some book, and I was feeling like more than I was a player for Man United. And I think when Man United signs some player, they need to show the story, because it was very important for me. And I've got a lot of respect for this shirt. It's very important, you know, it's very important to know the story, what can happen, why you play there, why when you see somebody in the club, you say hello, and you check there, and you don't know who is this, where is that guy, is now, I know, you know, and it's very important, I think, because the story, it helped me a lot. I give more than my 100% for that club, but after, you know, in the life, you never know, but definitely, the story of Man United is very important, because a lot of clubs don't have the story like Man United, and I think this is why Man United stay in the top.
So this is Red News Podcast 26, and that was a few words from Patrice Evra when we spoke to him a few years back about what it is about United that you have to get, and what unfortunately some of the players that at the moment don't have. And if you remember, that interview was cracking. Then the one with Gary Neville we've got coming up for the Juve Mag is even better. And I'm joined now with Nigel, who's been on the podcast before. Lifelong Red, who's been travelling the world with United for too many years he'd like to remember. Now, we're in a situation we don't really know what's what. We're hearing rumours that Jose may have leaked it to either get the fans on board as one final defiant note, you know, to the players get in shape, or whether it's to get Woodward to publicly say, I support you, to then get the players in check. But either way, it seems like a final throw of the dice by someone. What are your thoughts on it all, Nige?
I'm a bit baffled by what's going on, I'll be honest. I heard Gary's interview last night live, which is unusual for me because I very rarely watch Friday Night Football. And it was like, shit, he's saying what we actually think and believe. The club is rotten from top to bottom at the moment, and I include the manager and the players in that. It's badly managed, and Woodward's obviously not a football fan, he's just the Glazers' right-hand puppet, does what they want him to do. And until it actually hits them in the bottom line, on the balance sheet, I think they're going to lurch from crisis to crisis. It's a 5 or 10 year cycle, this, I think, we're going through, and it's not good at the minute. The way it's been managed, it's just...
But then
I
always think we're lurching then into Liverpool in the 80s. I always maintain we're never, you know, we're not signing Jimmy Carter or David Speedy yet, but we are now. You know, when do the headlights go on and someone says, for fuck's sake, put the brakes on, stop this?
Liverpool in the 90s, Ben, not the 80s.
Sorry. That's right now, a decade, sorry.
You're quite true. I mean, Liverpool just thought they were comfortable there and just sat back on their laurels. And I think since Ferguson went, we just thought it'd be a seamless process just to move on. Fergie drained the last out of that last squad with the financial shackles on, albeit you could argue was sort of became a bit of a Glazer apologist. I'm not sure. Possibly that's the case. But nevertheless, I mean, he signed Van Persie, which was a masterstroke, and that won us that last league title. Since then, we've sort of bumbled from one situation to another, and there's no continuity. And as Barney quite rightly says, nobody seems to get the club and what the actual ethos of it is. It's just another job to them, and the players in particular, some of them should be ashamed at their actions recently. They're just...
Well, we talked before that, I mean, Pogba, we know, is so talented, but there's actually putting that into action and putting it into play and then doing it week in, week out. Last week when he gave the ball away and he sauntered back, I just thought, there's disrespectful. I mean, you know, Jose, if he's feel as the another rumour, you know, he feels pressurised into playing him, just don't. you know, like it, stick by your whatever you've got. If you're going to go down in what you believe in. You know, you can't have a flim-flam player who turns it on for when he wants to turn it on.
No, I agree. But the problem is, I mean, what message is Jose doing, giving to the players? You know, he's paid to coach and manage these players, and they're not bad players individually. They're, you know, most of them are internationals. Yeah, you don't become an international footballer if you've not got half a decent bit of talent.
But why I feel we're stuck in quicksand, Nigel, because I'm defending the man I don't want to defend, which is Jose. I mean, he's publicly, you know, you can see, even after Tuesday night, him saying, you know, I haven't got defenders who are technically gifted. Well, Bally and Smalling had kept a clean sheet. Yeah. Why don't you praise them? Yeah. So I'm not a Jose fan, but then I just feel, who are we left to fucking defend here?
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, he's got to. And well, he set it all up in the summer, really, on the pre-season tour, when he moaned about what was going on. And it was a case of, well, that it's the same for every club in pre-season when there's been a World Cup. It's not a new thing, this World Cup or a European Championship. It happens every 2 years, so it happens. Get on with it. Coach the players you've got. Don't slag them off and belittle them, which he did. He said that most of these players won't be playing for us this season. Well, what message does that send to the young players? Yeah. It's just the wrong message. They want to play for United, or hopefully they do. I think most of them, when they're kids and they've got ambitions to be professional footballers, of course they want to play professional football. And if they can do that at Manchester United, even better.
Yeah. Well, it just feels toxic, no? I mean, from top, as you said, from top to bottom. If you know, my view is, I'd eke out what we can out of Jose. I don't want him in next season. There's no doubt in that. And I do think the football improves. But I think if you make a rash decision now, you're again setting us back another year or 2 years. You know, because this clamour for Zidane, I just don't get. It's like, you know, he's won a lot of things at Real Madrid, who had world-class players, who turned it on and off like a tap. So, you know, you're getting another manager who can't motivate players for the bread and butter games.
No, I agree. It's good. Yeah, I don't understand this clamour for Zidane either. I'll agree, but I think the longer you leave it, the longer or the worse the malaise becomes, and the more polluting it becomes. Yes, and more toxic. And then you're digging a bigger hole in yourself to get out of. Then I just think if we can make a change at some point, whenever that may be, or whenever it's deemed to be right, we said it'll probably get wrong as well. It's got to be done sooner rather than later, because otherwise we're just, you know, what's Jose going to do for the rest of the season? You know, he's quite happily bumble on, not qualify for Europe and then blame it on the board. You can't do that. He's paid to do a job. He knew the situation when he came into the club. He might not have known the exact policy.
Not a football man, a Glazer man, an accountant with a physics degree to make football decisions for what they keep telling us is the biggest club in the world, making amateurish decisions. So you've got no faith. I mean, it comes back to the Glazers. So what do we do? You know, I've had people messaging in me saying, call a boycott again. Now, for me, there's so many.
A boycott doesn't work, because ultimately, let's face it, 90% of us have paid our season ticket money up front, so if we never go to a game again this season, they don't give a fuck. They've had our money anyway. You know, they don't care if we turn up or not. All right, you might get an email from, is it Matt, I think, or Dan, dear Dan, who will say, oh, you didn't turn up for the game, or you were late, or whatever. Yeah. But yeah, you know, that's water off a duck's back to us, isn't it? You know, they've had our money.
I didn't think, if it didn't work in 2005, I cannot see where the support is more sanitised. We've got less numbers of the people that you would say that understand the club the way we do. We all understand it in different ways, but that's my fit. If it, you know, and I'm talking about people that did it, like JP. If the numbers weren't there then, how can they be now? And I agree to be my opinion to be changed. It's not that I'm saying, oh, I'm you know, I'm cozy and I want to protect my status with the club. We have no status. Red News is banned completely. I'm as at loss with this as anyone. I'm as down with this as anyone. But I do not want United fans to look embarrassed, where we say, right, everyone walk out after 10 minutes and we're only 20 or 30 or 500. You need 20, 30,000 to do that. And how do we do that when we're so disunited? Because the first thing that happens is United fans start falling out with each other, which we saw in 2005. And the Glazers and Edward would look at us like, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, we've seen that, as you quite rightly say, since 2005. And first and foremost, I say, if we had a mass protest and walked out. The problem is, in 2005, you know, despite all the shenanigans that have gone on at FC United and whatever, they stood by their principles and they went and did what they believed right, albeit it didn't turn out probably quite as they expected. But nevertheless, at that time, we lost most of what you would, might want to call our militant people or the hardcore. Those people haven't, those seats that they used to sit in aren't empty anymore, they're just full of tourists. And, you know, Johnny Come Latelys, who saw us as, you know.
Well, there is a slight nuance in, but we have seen this before in the 90s, even when United are struggling to sell tickets for games. But yes. does that come to the football? Why aren't people going to Valencia on a Tuesday night as general sale, where they would have?
Well, apparently they were on sale this morning for Newcastle at home.
Right.
I've never seen that before. But again, that's probably pervasive of the whole where we are as a society as much as anything. And yeah, the football's not great. It's pretty diabolical.
That's pretty
mildly. I was trying to be polite. And people have got better things to do with their money on a Saturday night. It is R5 kickoff. Well, that ruins your Saturday night, basically, doesn't it? You know, your Saturday night's gone. And also, it's, you know, we're in a bit of a not a quandary, that's the wrong word to use, but kind of a vacuum as to where people's futures are with, you know, what's going on politically and where are their jobs going to be in 12 months' time. So people are a little bit concerned about that as well, aren't they? Well, so I don't think it's entirely down to the football, it's just the economic climate.
As we know, the Old Trafford average age of a season ticket holder is 54, approaching 55. I mean, to put it, you know, that can't carry on, because we will just filter away into the ether. You know, so United aren't doing, you know, I appreciate the lads in J-Stand doing all they can to get, but that's 1,000 people.
Yeah.
United have never, ever dealt with the issue of how do you get youngsters into this club, and they need to take the baton from the likes of me, you. They need to go with it and say, form the sort of set of United culture that you want to.
It's very difficult to do that, though, isn't it? Because unless somebody's born with it in their sort of blood and all the rest of it, it's very difficult. The world's changed now to when we grew up, Barry. I mean, your mum took you when you were young, my dad took me when I was young. And we're the privileged ones in that respect.
I get that. But United have made it so hard. You know, I see a lot of the dads and sons, dads and daughters, but they make it so hard. You know, you can't just turn up. You've got to plan it 6 weeks in advance. You can't dare say the daughter got ill, you know, hand it to a mate, because you're punished with a 3-year ban. Yeah. It's also provocative in the club. That I always maintain the language that they use towards us. You're one of those ones, Nigel. You went year, game in, game out, year in, year out. And then you had a moment where you thought, well, you know, I want to go and see cricket overseas. Because they can't just treat you like this and think they can get away with it.
No, I agree about it, and it's very difficult. I mean, this day and age, there's so many alternatives for younger people, young kids to do. Teenagers, for argument's sake, or kids growing up. I mean, we didn't have all the choice years ago. You know, every game is virtually on TV. You can stream it or whatever. You can watch it without actually having to put 50 quid or whatever out of your pocket to go and watch a game. I mean, 50 quid, that's it. Even my season gets 50 quid a game. But you could have the cheapest ticket, but by the time you get there and mess about with transport,
it's 100 quid a day.
It's 100 quid a day out.
So. Yeah. What happens then, Nigel? How do we I want positivity. You know, I want to feel happy going to a game. I don't want to feel this cloud over us.
I'm struggling to find any at the moment, because I've been battered by it, all this bad news. Not bad news necessarily, but, well, it is bad news. Yeah. Bad rumour mill and what I'm actually standing up or sitting down and watching.
We're fearing playing Newcastle. I do think we will win today. We've got to. We can't, but, you know, you're fearing Newcastle who haven't won a game all season.
In a way, you almost think, if stories are true, then what happened last night, yesterday afternoon, whenever it happened, maybe that is trying to be a sort of a boost for the players. Fucking hell, we're playing Newcastle. Oh, we shouldn't need a boost. Someone's coming back to the Moyes era and saying, let's make it difficult for Newcastle. For fuck's sake, they haven't won a game all season.
Yeah, I do think it might be toxic. We might finally get to see, you know, in the old days you'd hear Martin Edwards as a wanker, which he probably was in the ground at that moment. But, you know, like, you might... Right, so let's have a bit of positivity. Name your favourite player. come on, Nigel, give us a bit of
favourite player
ever for you.
Oh, ever?
Yeah.
Oh, it's got to be
not now.
I've got to say, that'd be a struggle.
Yeah.
I was fortunate enough, because I'm old enough, and I only saw him latterly in his career. But it's got to be George Best.
Come on, tell me why then. I asked, I'll pull the other way.
It was just mesmeric. As I say, he was latterly in his career. My dad had told me a lot about him before I actually was lucky enough to go. And he just, it was just charismatic.
What did he have that, you know, that people were just so, I've seen the video clips, obviously. There was a talent that was just a natural gift.
Yeah.
But there's something that resonated far beyond that with Reds as well.
I think he had a personality and he was charismatic. He, in theory, to move the calendar forward, if you actually saw Messi's performance at Wembley the other night against Tottenham, he actually ripped him to bits. That Besti was as good as that. If you brought the best genes forward and then he was born 20 years ago, he'd be doing what Messi's doing now. In my opinion.
Yeah. And finally, we've lost a dear friend in Mick Burgess, who we've got a tribute for in the next mag. And you were friends with him. What's your funniest memory over the years that you could think of? Mick? And there are many, many, many.
There are many, yeah.
They're suitable for an adult audience.
Right. I always remember we played away at Juventus one year at the Stadio dell'Alpi. And we've been drinking down by the river, I think it's the River Po, isn't it? In Turin. We've been drinking down there at some bars down there before the game, and Mick was a big drinker. Well, even he could barely stagger up the street. And we actually, me and Welshfeld and a couple of others, we parked him by a tree and he just fell asleep in the grass. And we returned about four or five hours later, and he was still there hugging the tree. So we had to wake him up to take him back to the bar. We left this bar about, I don't know, 6 o'clock, half past six, 7 o'clock in the morning, I can't remember exactly. And then on the way back, we called in a coffee shop because we needed a bit of a liner. And Berger, when he buys us, I can't remember what it was some ridiculous Italian, it was probably Grappa or something like that. Funny as fuck. Great bloke.
I remember from that night, that was the first trip, wasn't it? Because it was really on top. That was when me and Rob, who I've also lost, were chased by the ones who had the knives, and that was fucking surreal. And then one of their ultras who had a fucking like machete type thing, he was wearing a York City. And finally, when we were protected by cheering old Bill, Rob just went, "York City, is that the best you can muster?" I said, "Fucking hell, Rob, don't say that till the police have given us a drive through." We ended up down the River Po, and there was a tramp who was so small. He was only about 3 foot. He was wearing stockings and suspenders. Male tramp. And he kept coming up to Mick and bothering Mick's ears. And Mick had a massive thing about anyone touching his ears.
He did. Yeah.
And it must have been for about an hour that this tramp would come up, flick his ears, and then Mick would try and chase him to throw him in the river, I'd imagine.
He was incapable.
And he could never reach him. So it was just like this fucking Laurel and Hardy set to. Many, many happy memories of a fucking unique character.
Yeah.
For, you know, for better and worse, he was a mate that you always knew.
Just another one before you go.
Yeah.
I remember it was one of the World Club Championship games in Tokyo. It was probably the second one, 2008.
Yeah.
And we were all in the reception of the hotel just waiting to, you know, people to come from their rooms, so we were going to go out together. There was only, you know, 8 or 10 of us. It wasn't a massive group. And Birgo suddenly appears out the lift wearing like a bloody a kimono, and he's doing a dance in the reception of the hotel in a kimono. And if you know me, Burgess, you know how big he was. It wasn't a pretty sight, but it was funny as fuck.
Many memories. And rest in peace, mate. So thanks, Nigel. So what's your prediction then for today?
I'd like to try and be optimistic, but I kind of fancy it might be a 0-0.
Oh, for fuck's sake. On that note, cheers, Nigel. Thanks, mate. Thanks, Nigel.
All right.
Yeah, brilliant. So I'm now joined at Old Trafford by Ian McCartney, who for me is the definitive United historian. If you haven't checked out his works, they're available on Amazon, Kindle or hardback, paperback.
examples like the Forgotten Fixtures, which are just fantastic pieces of work, and capturing moments in time at United, which you should know or try to learn. And he runs the Collectors Club. So tell us a little bit about how that's developed since you took over.
I took over in 1990. It was formed in 1982 by three Manchester-based collectors. I took over, as I say, in 1990, and it's just sort of progressed from there. Nowadays, instead of producing a sort of hard copy, I do it online. Satisfies the need. So,
do you prefer doing it online?
Yes and no. It's nice to have a copy in your hand, but if you do it online, full colour, and do as many pages as you want, there's no restrictions. So it works out.
How do people get hold of this if they wanted to?
Go find me on the internet, somewhere along the
way. Via Twitter, they can contact you. Because I always find every issue has something unique, different, that you wouldn't find anywhere. You're not going to find it in fanzines, you're certainly not going to find it in a program anymore.
Yeah, you've got to look at it from that point of view, because there's collectors with, let's say, everything, and there's collectors just starting out. So you've got to have a nice balance between the two. And what you find put on it, you just don't know what's going to turn up.
What for you as a collector is, what do you look for yourself, for your own?
Strange, I've not added to the collection for a long time. I mean, I like menus, I like just sort of quirky things, which anything really.
Yeah.
I mean, match tickets now.
How are you doing? What's your...
Match tickets now are very collectible. I've got quite a few traditionally from way back that I picked up for pennies that you could get quite a lot of money for now.
What's your holy grail that you possess and that you'd like to possess?
What I'd like to possess? A lot of money. Never mind.
In a pure United.
I don't know. It's a difficult one. I've got Red Star Belgrade away the last game before Munich. It's nice to have. I've got a fully signed venue by both teams from United playing Duke on 57 here at Old Trafford. Billy Meredith, Welsh International Cup. Things like that are nice to have.
That's fantastic.
I don't know. Possibly something that belonged to Duncan Edward or something like that. Yes,
something personal.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everyone. It's always in the eye of the beholder, as we say. You know, obviously, I've got so much stuff, and I'm trying to clear for space as much as anything, keep the stuff that I mum had a 67-68 enlarged programme, which is signed by pretty much the whole European Cup, and Joe Mercer and Matt Busby and Jimmy, it's just an item that I will never, you know, that's my, that for me, I can't see that. And I've got autographs, but for me, it's always been the match tickets. That was from my kid, that was always my focus, get the match tickets, keep the match tickets.
Strange you should mention things like that, because I've got a signed poster from the 99 Cup Final in Barcelona. It came out of a short window, and it's signed by the whole squad.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact there's only two in existence, and mine's just rolled up in a cardboard tube up in the loft.
But programmes, they're just nothing now, really, eBay, you can get them 10 a penny, there's no...
Well, that's it, there's no real value. Okay, if you've got the early 50s, obviously pre-war are still £200-300 each sometimes, but the sort of 70s onwards, missing out the sort of second division year, and obviously the treble season.
Why does the bug take hold then? Why do you think... Is it in and all of us, you know, or is there just a niche for someone? Someone's ticket stubs is another person's menus.
I mean, people collect strange things. I mean, I remember a television programme years ago, this guy collected bricks. Okay, he collected bricks. Well, often people collect stamps, bloody train numbers and everything else.
Yeah.
Everybody to their own. I mean, you get people collecting records. We'll pay £35,000 for one record. So, I mean... I wouldn't condone anybody for anything.
I always remember Veg, the old editor of Red Issue, when we were travelling into games in the mid-80s, and we'd stop at places like Coventry, and there'd be this sea of train spotters, and everyone would give them abuse. And then he'd say, but they're only doing really what we're doing in different format on a Saturday, but ours involved a lot more alcohol.
People collect butterflies and things.
Yeah.
Whatever takes your fancy. We even get to a collect knickers off washing lines, but yeah, we'll not go into that.
I don't think that happens anymore. But so here, obviously, things have changed dramatically for Collector, for the programme. You know, me and Mum picked them up for years, and now I haven't got a programme here. I can't even remember the last one, you know. Well, I don't think it's just adverts. So, no, that's not discredit to the editor. He's a good lad, you know, tries his hardest, but there's nothing that's standard. Like, you pick up a programme from 75, 76, there'll be letters of interest.
The programmes went the same way as one, basically. I mean, the information and what they've got on hand, the programmes are the second to none, but it's just a modern day thing. Yeah. I mean, it's full of adverts. Okay,
there's lads trying, like, you know, the library, the museum, it's fantastic, you know, for certain. And there's good lads we know, you know, who try their hardest to maintain. So I suppose there's fights within Old Trafford and how they maintain a level without.
I mean, you could go on to the present circumstances within the club. I mean,
but what do you make of it?
Everything's connected. Everything's
What do you make of it?
Present day, it's difficult. And I said to you earlier, I think everything stems back to Ferguson's time. People won't admit it, but I think it does. I mean, it stems back to the carry on about the stupid horse. If that hunter developed, who knows what would happen. Now, Mourinho was the right man at the time, but he's the wrong man now. I think he said he would grasp the club's history. I don't think he's done that. You sit there and you watch the game unfold in front of you. The team, at times you think you're actually playing as safe as 13 men. The opposition seem to have far more time in the ball, more options to pass to. I think it's just trying to get rid of him. It's not for me to say. I think the problems.
I think it's inevitable.
The problem goes higher up between the managers.
I think it was everyone. I'd blame everyone, but I cannot see. There's no route out. There's no Jose in the end of the season or in a year's time turning around and screw you. We won the European Cup. Hey, mate, how are you doing?
There's no. Get one off you.
Cheers, mate. That's £3, please. Thank you.
Change.
Nice one. Cheers, mate. Thank you. There's nice one. Yeah, he's not winning the European Cup or League.
No, I mean, but the thing is, do you get rid of him now? He has to be here for another 2 months. Then, by the time you hit Christmas, the games get fewer and fewer. It's okay now, saying, oh, we're only in the start of October, there's still plenty of games left. But when you hit the turn of the year, you're chalking the game off, and you can't.
My worry is, though, it's a feeble. I get, and I've had criticism on Twitter, which never barometer, but is, I think if you make another rash decision, you're rushed. Yeah. This is the period in time where you're rushed into decision. The end of the season is a more, you'd hope, but you're relying on people who keep making cock-up decisions. So we go back to the men at the top, the men in the middle, the men at the bottom. You know, the players have badly let us down. What's your name and where are you from?
Name's Rick Mendes. I'm from Reading, originally from South Africa. I've been here 15 years now.
And what do you make of it?
Make of the situation at United?
Yeah.
I think that the problem stems that we don't have the leadership that we had in the Fergie days. Fergie wouldn't have allowed that, and also we don't have leaders in the dressing room who would have allowed that. Guys like Evra, Vidic, Ferdinand.
But we were lucky and blessed,
Yes, yes. Nowadays, I cannot imagine Valencia walking in there, saying, come on, guys, we've got a game today. I don't even believe he can speak English for a start. Well, not fluently anyway. So we don't have that kind of guy. We also don't have anybody. The director of football type of person, if Mourinho needs it.
Well, I think we all know it. We need that. We have to get that now. It's too late. It's too amateurish when big clubs, you know, the Bayern model. And Fergie's been advocating that for a long time. For all Fergie making mistakes, he saw that you have to inherit a club that has a structure with players who get it, know it, live the club. Not gonna walk off after a year or 2 years.
You see this guy on Wednesday, a Tuesday, Valencia, Ezequiel Garay. He outplayed United attack. He was on when he was at Benfica, Fergie wanted him. and they, you know, George Mendes, he put a big man, etc. They said they wanted 50 million. He went to Zenit St. Petersburg for 20 million.
Yeah,
he has one guy.
But that's what value, you know, seeps through. Someone mentioned earlier, you know, Van Persie. But that was almost a thank you sign for Fergie.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know, the man who's won everything shouldn't have to go with a begging bowl saying, can you please sign Van Persie to sort this out?
As you said earlier, the club fostered a lot of the stuff on them themselves. You get them broadcast, no, we've got a United legend here today, Quentin Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, oh my God. Nice guy, yeah. But United legend.
Yeah, but that's because Ambassador was sent players around the world to, you know, further climb up to corporates. I mean, but Tony Valencia, you know, like in the post, he knew what was going on. And if he didn't, but someone said, you know, just it's just so many things wrong. Right, I want to keep all I've done. All we do is like to. Let's have a bit of positivity. Who's your favourite? Sorry, one last point, and then tell me a bit.
Second last year, which is a good thing. We beat teams like Liverpool and Spurs to second
place. For me, a good thing is not second and 19th.
Exactly.
It's one and
a long way behind. Second, but a long way behind City. How do we make up those 19 points? Not by signing just one player, Fred, because Dalot has played 16 for Porto and Lee Grant is a reserve goalie. We needed more players. And Woodward, back. Mourinho, I give you another year contract. All of a sudden, says no, we got to.
Well, that's farcical. You don't give a man a new deal in January and then say
no. We can't.
I think
that's why the director of football comes in and tells. Now, my point is this: they came second, a good thing. You know, all things considered. Today, they know we're near. It's the same team. So what's happened? So the guys come there. You sit in a room and say, come, what is the problem? Oh, no, he shouted at me and mounted me publicly. I don't like that. Okay, Mourinho, you're not going to do that anymore. Fergie never did. You're not going to do it.
Yeah, but there's too many egos. Pogba's not going to allow that. Pogba's going to moan to his agent.
Yeah, all that kind of crap must be stopped.
Yeah, but Fergie's era, we're talking an era where managers could... They could use that control that they can't now.
They own too much these days.
Even Fergie might have struggled in this age.
I would say that
people who said, you know, he saw Pogba's agent coming, Fergie wouldn't have re-signed Pogba. He wouldn't have re-signed.
On the same hat, Pogba, I like the guy, I think he's a great player.
But how often has
he's not been played properly.
I know, but still, as someone says, you're good enough. You know, I know Paul Ince gets slated, but Paul Ince played right wing for 40, 50 games
right
and still managed to show
a
bit of quality. You know, Keane was shoved over. We had players sometimes shoved back in centre-back for four or five games. They showed their class, and we haven't seen that.
We paid 100 million euros for him. He was the highest, the most expensive player for that. We should be getting a star. Not a guy that says, oh, you know, I've only played with Matic.
No,
I know. They're overrunning me in midfield. I need another guy.
I think Matic, if Matic was a Fergie player in terms of that era, where basically you get the ball and you pass it to a more talented player in front of you, he'd shine. But he's asking now to, you know, you're putting a bloody thumb in a massive dumb dam. Have a get my analogies mixed up.
I
want a bit of positivity. Who's your favourite player here?
Right, here
ever.
Today?
No, ever. Not here
ever.
Today.
That's a hard one, very hard one.
You can only pick one.
I can only pick one. The King. Not Cantona. There was only one king.
What did he have then?
And that was Dennis.
Come on, tell me what he had.
What he had? He was Scottish. He had everything. I mean, best, yeah, but I mean, no, Dennis Law was...
Tenacious. Finisher.
Yeah.
Come on, describe, because I've seen the videos, but that's it.
He could conjure goals out of nothing. The ball broke in the 6-yard box, it was in the back of the net, he had it.
And a right little bastard, well.
Yeah. It is a bit. I mean, after Law, best. After best, it has to be Jim Holton. Then you put Holton before best.
We're just going to list a lot of Scottish.
Holton was what you wanted in a United player. He played for his shirt.
Yeah.
He got stuck in. He didn't care if he got hurt or whatever. Nowadays...
Well, I was lucky enough, we used to go to his pub before Coventry, and a lovely man as well. Decent.
Was it not... Yesterday, anniversary of death, then as well.
But we are lucky. We, you know, some clubs they pick two or three throughout their lives. We could be here 4 hours later and have 100 players. So we are spoiled.
I mean,
you know, we are very, very spoiled.
I mean, if you take into consideration the treble season, you came here on the Sunday, watched us beat Tottenham to win the league. Walked out your house and 10 minutes away, you're at Wembley Saturday for the cup final, and then Wednesday you went to Barcelona and won the Champions League. I mean, what more could you ask for?
But that doesn't mean that you then accept mediocrity from a club.
No.
I mean, we should have won more. That's another, right. We're optimistic now.
Okay,
we're positive vibes. Who's your favourite?
Favourite player? Oh, yeah. Good question. I never thought about that before.
Dennis Law.
And the king is Dennis Law.
Funny enough, a guy like United are known for flair players. You know, be it a guy like Dennis Law or Georgie Best or all your wingers or gigs, whatever. But the guy I think... to me, represent or gave me the most joy was actually Brian Robson.
Right, yeah,
because in the 80s, we didn't have those type of flair players, and he was the machine, he was the heartbeat of our team. I will go to my grave thinking, and for all guys like Mark Hughes, funny enough, that in 85, had the guys stayed fit, we would have won that league.
Yeah.
Because we won the first 10 in a row, and he got injured, I think, in the 12th game against Luton, I think it was.
And Sheffield Wednesday in the 17th for 18th.
Came back, because they came back too soon. In those days, we only had one sub. Ron Atkinson did not have any other feeder player sort of thing. He just had the inner circle of play, which was his 11. And so when he was gone, there was nobody else to come in. We didn't have seven guys on the bench.
He carried so many sides.
And Paul McGraw had to play in midfield. You know, imagine today... Well, in the 99 side, for instance, if Roy Keane was... Well, he was missing for the cup final. You bring in Nicky Butt.
Yeah.
You didn't bring in Ronnie Johnson or something.
But we were lucky. You know, the debate I always say, Robson or Keane, it's always Robson for me. But we were so lucky in the space of 15 years. We got to see both in their prime years play for Manchester United.
The thing with... why I like Robbo more... He scored more goals. He scored almost 100 goals, I think 98,
and
99.
And to drag up mediocrity.
Yeah. And he was
the one thing I'd say on that 85, 86, I hate now getting older being affected by United results. And a few recently, I'd say the City 1-0, where they ended up winning the league, you know, where Fergie played the wrong system, that haunted me. Watford, bizarrely, when we lost 3-1, that really affected me. City, 6-1 here. Okay. And I would say last week, I was so down. I hate getting like that. 85, 86, that summer, as a kid, teenager, I just was so... I shouldn't be morose at that age, but I'll never see United win the league. Like 92. And what is it? It's affecting me. It's affecting so many people. Enough of the mediocrity here. Anyway, let's end it with... Let's win 5-0. Let's at least go into an international break. Have at least 24 hours where we can think a little bit happy.
Newcastle used to be the team that we could always beat. But now they've got a manager...
No, this is an optimistic part. 5-0.
5-0, yeah, because we always used to think we'd beat these guys.
We've got to. I don't want to feel down tomorrow. Cheers, lads. Cheers, everyone. Thanks, lads. So I couldn't just leave the moans and groans from before the game. You had to update it, obviously, and here I am a couple of days later, and there's a calmness. Well, the press are still speculating, but it feels a little bit better, for now at least. I'm sure there's the next jolts ahead, but at least we won, and it was great. I mean, I thought the support, Jay Stand was fantastic. Whatever was going to go down, we're going to go down, you know. I think, as I keep saying, there's people who don't like Jose, unsure, or even may want a new manager, but we're doing what it says on the tin. It's just supporting at games, and I thought there was a real, even at 2-0, just let's see this out, and we're not going to be slagged off. And it was fantastic, one of the best in a long time. And then as the game crept back into the second half, you just thought at least they gave everything. You know, the tactics were bonkers, the Bally coming off, whatever, even if he doesn't trust him. You put McTominay in the back, then you go, God knows what it was. Pogba at the back, you just think it was the last throw of the dice, but that's what you want to see more of Jose doing. Gamble, twist, that's what United's about. There's no coincidence that if you pick out your best memories for Jose, they would be Palace away, City away and Newcastle. What's the common denominator? We had fuck all to lose, 2-0 down, and we went for it. Now, obviously, you know, you don't want to go behind, so, but there's got to be a way that we can play a faster, more penetrative, enjoyable football, but also stick to Jose's remits of not giving out at the back, because we're being terrible at the back. We're letting so many goals, so unlike him. Even shit defenders were performing much better than this in his first 2 years. Or, not shit, throwaway line, you know what I mean. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a false dawn, but I just thought we had to win. I mean, I was like a teenager in there. I was getting really emotional during the first half, which was a bit pathetic, really affecting me, but just did not want to lose. And yes, it was only against Newcastle, but I did not want to lose. The shit storm of this 2 week break, you know, and almost it's like I'm saying, well, I don't want to see him sacked, when I suppose I'm thinking more a logical conclusion to the end of the season. I don't know. I don't know what I'm thinking, but we just had to win a fucking game of football at 2-0 down, and to do that was magnificent in the context of where we were, and considering we had so many poor players. Lukaku again looking well overweight, looking too slow, you know, and let's see what it does for Sanchez's demeanour, his miserable ass, marred ass act, you don't know. But we've got to go to Chelsea, we've got to go to Juventus, we can't lose both of those. Let's go to Chelsea and think they are a very, very tough opposition, but make the game tough for them. But equally, we've had such an appalling record under several managers, including Fergie there, where we've defended and it's not worked. Show a bit of spark up front, you know. So, but no, it was a day when you just thought, for once, we could stick two fingers up at the world again and say, fuck off. Just leave us alone for a couple of weeks. So that was pleasing. Goons, just hugging mates. And a note to myself that United can still affect me in very bizarre ways. You can get upset. You can turn around and you can celebrate like mad. And think, yeah, we know it's only one game and we've been dreadful this season. The egos. But maybe somewhere they got themselves together and just said, you don't like each other, I don't give a shit if you don't like each other. You've got your moods, you've got, you want him out. Just get on the pitch and do what you're paid to do. Vast sums of money. But I'm sounding like a broken record. So I was happy. And let's see what happens. I still think he's on an edge, but I don't think with any alternative. You know, someone suggested, well, if we had the international break to get rid of him, yeah, 2 weeks will solve all this shit. Not a chance. This is a huge task, so there's better ways to do it. And the one thing you can say about Jose is, of course, he cares about himself, but through that, he's caring about us. And he is giving as much as I think he can, even if it's batshit crazy decisions. But some of the decisions he's doing are, you know, putting McTominay, it's almost like, you didn't give me a defender, so this is what I have to do. Don't have to do that. There's better options. I don't know what you do, how you work it out. But there's several players who you think, your time is coming to an end, Valencia. Or he may look at a move if things have stayed the same. Look at yourself in the mirror. You're supposed to be club captain. If you believe that laughable Instagram bollocks, look at yourselves in the mirror. And how many can actually say, I'm giving my all to get myself out of the situation? They did in the second half. It was just 45 minutes. Let's see some more. So I don't know the one he's after Chelsea. We've got the Gary Neville interview, and do not miss that. It's already 6 pages long. It's already fantastic. It's already great about his time at United and what he thinks of now. And he's going to add to it tomorrow, Wednesday, and bring us up to date with everything. So he doesn't hold back. So it is worth getting hold of. And I'm going to do a pre-order because we've only got it on sale for 2 games. So, and thanks for all your support and kind words. Look, podcast is bollocks, basically. It's just a few mates chatting. No world movement is going to be made of it. So we're just trying to make it a little bit better. Time by time, have a laugh. Pay tribute to mates like Burgo are passing. Too many these days. And then think, just enjoy the isolated moments in the madness of supporting Manchester United season by season. Cheers all.